This summer, click into cordless power with Memorial Day savings at the Home Depot. Tackle more than half an acre of grass with the convenience and gas-like power of the Ryobi 40-volt battery-powered mower. And keep your flower beds looking fresh with the 40-volt cordless string trimmer. Then clear leaves and debris with the 40-volt leaf blower. No cords, no gas, no hassle. Click into Memorial Day savings happening now at the Home Depot and on homedepot.com. How doers get more done.
Today's episode is brought to you by Westholm. We all know, from home cooks to restaurant chefs to eating enthusiasts, that the quality of your ingredients makes all the difference, especially when it comes to meat.
Westholm, which is based in Queensland and the Northern Territory, Australia, is working with the land to create nature-led Australian Wagyu.
They steward 16 million acres of rangeland, guided by the natural ecosystem where their cattle thrive. The result is high-quality Wagyu beef that reflects the terroir of Northern Australia, and a flavor suited to complement any cuisine.
Westholm believes that when nature leads, flavor follows. Learn more at westholm.com/savor. That's westholme.com/savor.
Life in our modern age comes at you pretty fast, which makes our time away especially valuable. When I take time to relax, I like to get far from my everyday life, immerse myself in natural beauty, and have unique experiences. But you don't have to leave the U.S. to experience tropical rainforests and islands filled with adventure, warm culture, and national treasures. Visit Puerto Rico, an island with a vibrant spirit that will sweep you away. Because when you visit, you don't become part of the island, it becomes part of you. In Puerto Rico, you can forget where you came from and embrace where you are. Puerto Rico, where visits end, but stories last forever. No passport required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
Hello and welcome to Savor, a production of iHeartRadio. I'm Annie Reese.
And I'm Lauren Vogelbaum. And today we have an episode for you about dragon fruit.
Yes, we do. Oh, because as mentioned, Life Day, very important holiday for me. Just passed. This is the infamous Star Wars holiday special, 1979, where we were introduced to a Wookiee holiday. I would call it Star Wars Christmas meets Thanksgiving. But it was presented in a 70s variety show. And it was a ride, is what we'll say. But I'll also say Life Day has gone mainstream. There are now like official things, like not fan made things, official things you can buy around Life Day. Oh, there is a cookbook that I have. And as I was getting ready for Life Day, which is on November 17th, I was perusing this cookbook, and I was looking for something we could talk about that would be Life Day adjacent, and we've done a lot of them already, but one ingredient I kept seeing was dragon fruit. Yes, which I suspect is for its, you know, in heavy quotes, like, otherworldly experience. It is a unique looking thing.
Yeah, they look stunning, honestly, and...
Yes.
I feel like there has been, there's definitely been a show that was not set on this world that I watched relatively recently in which a nice prop master had just like put a dragon fruit out on a table. And I was like, okay, cool.
Yeah. I mean, they're really, really beautiful. I don't think, I've never bought one. I've never attempted to cut one, although... I'm eager to learn more from you, Lauren, but I hear it's not that hard. It looks like it'd be difficult.
I've purchased exactly one to kind of, I was like, what is this about? Let's find out. To be honest, the one that I got wasn't super exciting to me. Like it's, again, very pretty, extremely photogenic, but the flavor to me was kind of just bland. But I've heard that that's something that a lot of producers are working with to try to improve, and that there's different varietals that are a little bit more strongly flavored. Or maybe I just got a dud. I mean, it's a natural product that can happen. Definitely not difficult to work with. Like they look like they're going to give you a lot of trouble. But it was, I mean, I would liken it to an apple or orange experience. Yeah.
Well, their insides are also pretty striking. So I feel like I have had it in like a fruit bowl situation. I feel like I've had it.
Sure.
I've just never personally bought it, cut it, worked with it. But I think I have had it. And a lot of descriptions I've read was that it's kind of a very, despite its fabulous appearance, it's kind of a milder taste.
Yeah, totally.
So I don't know. I would love to hear more from listeners about this. I have not currently made the recipes, I guess, clearly, from the Life Day cookbook that include dragon fruit. But I'm interested. I am interested. I like a good nerdy recipe. This year we just ordered it in because it was a very busy day.
Oh, sure. But as soon as you do, you'll have to update us.
Well, as you know, I have long been threatening/cajoling you to watch the Life Day special with me. So perhaps that will be the day.
Oh, yeah. All right. Sure.
But in the meantime, dragon fruit. What is it?
Well, dragon fruit are the fruit of a type of cactus, and they do look just really wild, sort of alien or dragon-like, I guess, hence the name. They grow to about the size of a fist. They're sort of oval in shape and have the skin that has these like large, spiked, protective, waxy leaves enclosing this crisp, juicy, kind of like mildly sweet and sour to maybe a little bit earthy flesh that's shot through with tiny black seeds. And the leaves and the flesh can both come in stunning colors, like deep magenta, like the color out of space, like absolutely like violet magenta. Sometimes with the tips of the leaves, green in contrast. And the flesh can be a similar color, too, or a little bit lighter pinkish or white. But even when it is white, its contrast with those black seeds is just so striking. The flesh is usually what people are going for, though the leaves and flowers, or the skin and flowers are also edible. That flesh is either eaten raw or processed into beverages or desserts. It looks like a dragon egg. That's what it looks like. It looks like the egg of a dragon, and it tastes crisp and refreshing, like a kind of like a mild pear with crunchy little seeds, kind of like kiwi seeds. It is like someone from props wished real hard for like a sustainable bit of set dressing that grows on trees.
Yeah. And here the dragon fruit is.
Yep. There you go. not technically on trees because, botanically, dragon fruit plants are categorized as a few species within the Hylocereus genus, which is part of the cactus family. In the Americas, they're sometimes called pitaya or pitaya, which can lead to a little bit of confusion because there are some other cactus fruits that go by the same name. There's also a little bit of confusion about their genus classification. As we've talked about before, taxonomy is something that scientists like kind of enjoy arguing about. But in this case, the plants are not helping because they do cross-pollinate easily. So anyway, yes, this plant is a cactus. And if you've ever seen what's called a Christmas cactus, although I don't know why they're called that, because their genus name is Schlumbergera, which is amazing.
Yes.
like, give me the option to call something Schlumbergera, and I am on top of that.
Yes.
Anyway, Christmas cactus. The dragon fruit plant looks a little bit like a version of that that has just gone truly huge, just absolutely, like, Jurassic in size. Or if you're familiar with the orchid cactus, the dragon fruit plant is closely related to that. It is a tropical to subtropical cactus that grows these thick, fleshy, jointed stems, just like big old clusters of these flat-ish, ribbed, wavy branches, often with small spikes coming off of the sides. the number of ribs on each stem is being pointed to as a way to distinguish different genera, Hyloserius or Selenoserius. That's more detail than you probably needed, but I found it fascinating. Anyway, here we go. they are planted in the ground, but those stems can grow like 20 feet long. So they're given trellises that they can climb up along and then kind of drape back down over. And they'll put out aerial roots out into the trellises. And the overall effect when they reach full size is like a huge draping kind of meaty fern, or like a willow. The plants can live about 30 years, and once they're mature, they can produce some 100 kilos, that's about 220 pounds, of fruit every year.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. They do that by, the tips of the stems might flower during warm months with these big, pretty, fragrant, like white to cream or maybe pink flowers. The flowers can grow up to like 14 by 9 inches. That's like 35 by 25 centimeters. It's big. They only open at night. And I think I have this correct. They open for one night only. Yeah.
Whoa.
And thus depend on night pollinators like moths or bats, or more likely human intervention in order to grow fruit. The fruit that develops is, again, oblong, maybe about 4.5 inches or 11 centimeters thick or so. It comes in four basic varieties. Okay, a pinkish-red skin with flesh that's either white, pinkish-red, or purple, or yellow skin with flesh that's white. All of them, again, have the same small black seeds, and all are relatively mild in flavor. I've read that the yellow types taste a little stronger and sweeter. Again, if you've never seen one, they are stunning. If you have experience with these different varietals, write in and let us know.
Yes.
it is often eaten raw, peeled and diced, or maybe scooped directly from a halved fruit, and then, you know, used however you use fresh fruit, on its own or in sweet or savory dishes. It's also sold frozen for these uses, but it can be made into like juice or wine or cooked down into jam or processed into desserts, especially frozen desserts and like jellies, like gelatins. Yeah. But yeah, the peel is also edible. I understand it's a little bit bitter and used perhaps more like processed for color than for actual flavor. Syrups made from it are used to color pastries and candies. It's sometimes dried and then used to steep in hot water as a sort of tea, or deep fried into chips and eaten as a snack or a topping on other dishes.
Ooh.
I know, right? speaking of deep frying, the flowers are also edible. And they can be cooked like you would cook any kind of soft vegetable, you know, simmered into a soup or sautéed or battered and deep fried.
Sold. Sold on all of the above.
the fruit is also prized as like an ornamental object. And I've read that it's a symbol of good fortune in some Chinese cultures in particular. Again, right in. Also, its extracts, especially those bright pigments, are being investigated for various uses as a dye for foods and cosmetics, and for potential medicinal properties.
Yes. Well, what about the nutrition?
By itself, dragon fruit is pretty good for you. Lots of fiber, a little bit of protein, smattering of micronutrients, not too much sugar. As with other vegetation, the more brightly colored they are, the more like extra nutritional punch-ups they're likely to contain. It's really great for adding crunch and visual interest to a salad or a yogurt parfait or other fresh dishes like that. You know, it'll help fill you up, but to keep you going, pair it with a protein and a fat.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Just like dragons do, so I hear. we do have some numbers for you.
We do. Okay, as of this year, 2023, the global market for dragon fruit was valued at over $14 billion and growing.
Wow.
Asia Pacific grows and consumes the most, but Europe is the fastest growing market segment.
The U.S. imports most of our dragon fruit from Vietnam.
They are the world's largest producer. They grow about half of the world's supply of dragon fruit. And we're not even their largest importer. That honor goes to China, which imports as much as 80% of what Vietnam grows. How much was that? As of 2019, I can tell you Vietnam had about 55,000 hectares of land planted with dragon fruit and was producing some 1.2 million metric tons every year.
Wow.
Hoofda. Also, side note, I still cannot get over the fact that someone named their market research company Mordor Intelligence. It gets me every time.
I know, and I feel like we've never gotten to the bottom of this, but every time we're like, did they do that? How intentional was this?
I haven't looked that hard because I kind of don't want to know.
It's fair.
I just hope it's nerds. Back to dragon fruit. Other economically important producers include Thailand, Israel, Mexico, Colombia, and Taiwan. Okay, there's a couple festivals for dragon fruit here and there. 2023 marked the second annual dragon fruit festival in the province of Guimaras. In the Philippines, I hope I'm saying that right. I did look it up. This is the second year they've held this 10-day agrotourism event in August. Events include a parade with dragon fruit inspired costumes, farm tours, music, and some like educational/business type sessions. Yeah. The area has about 28 hectares planted, producing some 15 tons of fruit a year. Meanwhile, a small town in Mexico called Miraflores held its 31st annual Piraya Festival this year in July, and it features many kinds of cactus fruits, and there's music and foods like jams and drinks and sherbets made from the fruit, and a horse cavalcade.
Oh,
yeah, yeah,
cavalcade.
Yeah, big, big horse rearing area, especially in the past. So, yeah.
Well, as always, listeners, please let us know if you've been to any of these.
Oh my
events.
Goodness! Absolutely,
pictures welcome.
Yes, yes. Anything about those costumes, I would be excited to hear about.
Yes, but we do have a lot of history for you in the meantime.
We do, and we are going to get into that as soon as we get back from a quick break for a word from our sponsors. Today's episode is brought to you by Westholm. I'm a person who doesn't really cook with a lot of meat, to be honest, because when I do, I want it to be special.
I'm the same, and I do love sharing that food with people. And I have to say, we received some product, some steak, and I am very eager to share it with my friends.
Yeah, Westholm sent us a few of their products, and they included these gorgeous, gigantic tomahawk steaks that I, like, opened the box and immediately sent a picture to my best grilling friend, like, hang out soon.
Yes, I did too.
Westholm offers these beautifully marbled steaks because they have 16 million acres of rangeland across the northeast corner of Australia, from Brisbane to Darwin. They use a nature-led approach with the belief that if they balance the needs of their cattle with the needs of their environment, both can thrive.
Their cattle graze on native grasses like Mitchell grass, which is found only in Australia, and roam wild, foraging at will for the first 2 to 3 years of their lives.
The result is Wagyu beef that reflects the terroir of Northern Australia and a quality that would complement whatever you're into cooking right now.
Westholm believes that when nature leads, flavor follows. Learn more at westholm.com/savor. That's westholme.com/savor.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward, inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
So, the dragon fruit is native to Mexico, Central America, and South America. This one is kind of a dry one because it's just the records that they have. But these records do indicate, records from that region, that date back to the 13th century, that it was around there, and that it spread via birds. Producers propagated and cultivated and experimented with dragon fruit to come up with an edible crop. But yeah, in the early days, people and birds spread the seeds to neighboring islands in the Caribbean. But there are a few popular legends about dragon fruit.
Okay.
Yes. One of the most repeated goes like this. Thousands of years ago, when fire-breathing dragons breathed their last breath, out would come a dragon fruit. And if a human slayed a dragon, they would take the fruit and present it to royalty as proof of their prowess. And the dragon would be butchered and eaten by soldiers who were hoping to be granted the dragon's strength. The meat near the tail, which is where the core of their fire rested, was the most coveted. And the taste for that meat is what led to the extinction of dragons. Which is a cool story. And again, it is a very visually striking fruit.
Yeah.
Like, I can totally see that.
Yeah, I would not be surprised if a dragon coughed one up.
No, not at all. Not at all. As with most things, colonization and globalization spread dragon fruit production far and wide, most notably in Asia. The Spanish introduced it to the Philippines in the 16th century. By 1645, it was in China. The French introduced it to Vietnam and surrounding areas sometime around 1860, where, according to some records, it was first grown exclusively for Vietnam's royal family and the wealthy.
It had been introduced to Taiwan before that happened, back in like the 1700s or so, but it didn't become an economic crop until new varieties were reintroduced to Taiwan from Vietnam.
A shipment from Mexico heading for China introduced the dragon fruit to Hawaii in 1830. Apparently, a majority of the crop had died during transport, and they were discarded during a stop to Hawaii, but some of them were still alive and were planted, and then they flourished. Yes, and were at first typically grown as an ornamental crop. The first known record of dragon fruit in Florida isn't until 1962, though it probably was being cultivated there much earlier than that.
It was not introduced to Israel until the 1980s, but became a popular commercial crop for export to Europe due to Israel's proximity to Europe.
Yes. And beginning in the 20th century, dragon fruit was being grown commercially on a wide scale in many places, including in Southeast Asian countries, and even more particularly in Vietnam. Yes. In other cases, it has become naturalized or classified as an invasive species.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. In many places like South Africa and Brazil, it was introduced as an ornamental plant and then became invasive.
Yeah. But right, you know, like the spread of this fruit, the fruit is a little bit delicate when it's fresh, which means that as shipping technologies have improved, it's created interest in new markets. which has then created interest in new growing areas, as it is, or certainly can be, a high-value crop. Each individual fruit may be sold for like a couple bucks a piece, working out to like $8 or more a pound.
Right. And there is a lot of interest in this. I found an article specifically about dragon fruit in California and San Diego County. So since 2007, the Wallace Ranch Dragon Fruit Farm in San Diego County has hosted a dragon fruit production tour for growers of all levels. Mm. In 2020, they did go on hiatus for 2 years. But when they opened registration in 2022, it sold out in 24 hours.
Oh, wow.
Yes, one of the participants said of the event that they couldn't recall a year when the event didn't sell out.
Oh, wow.
I believe it's 60 people per tour. But okay. Yeah, there's an excitement, and there's people of all levels. Like I said, there are people who are like looking to get into it. There are people who are into it but want to know more. Like there is an interest for it for sure.
Yeah, I mean, that's awesome. I mean, they're really beautiful, and especially in this our modern era of like Instagrammable foods, I can see where people would be interested in growing it. The plants are also super pretty. Like I like looking up photos of these plants, I was like, do I need to try to grow a dragon fruit plant? Is that what I'm up to?
Yes.
I don't know.
Yes. So then I can complete my Life Day feast, which, by the way, the color of Life Day is also red.
Dragon
fruit also kind of fits in that way.
Yeah.
Kind of. Yeah.
It's adjacent, so, sure.
Yeah. Oh. Well, it is like a really... I'm not exaggerating at all that I could see it in a lot of like stories and fairy tales about how it came to be, because it is, I know we've used this word a couple of times, but it's striking. It is like visually arresting.
Yeah.
And I love that it only opens up at night, like maybe once. That's wild.
Yeah. I really want to find a botanical garden that has like a big full plant and take a close up look at it, because they sound really amazing.
They do. I want to as well. And listeners, as always, if you've seen one, if you have pictures, let us know.
If you've grown one, yeah. Oh my goodness.
Yes. Oh my gosh. But I think that's what we have to say about the dragon fruit for now.
It is, but we do already have some listener mail for you, though, and we are going to get into that as soon as we get back from one more quick break for a word from our sponsors. Today's episode is brought to you by Westholm. I'm a person who doesn't really cook with a lot of meat, to be honest, because when I do, I want it to be special.
I'm the same, and I do love sharing that food with people. And I have to say, we received some product, some steak, and I am very eager to share it with my friends.
Yeah, Westholm sent us a few of their products, and they included these gorgeous, gigantic tomahawk steaks that I, like, opened the box and immediately sent a picture to my best grilling friend, like, hang out soon.
Yes, I did too.
Westholm offers these beautifully marbled steaks because they have 16 million acres of rangeland across the northeast corner of Australia, from Brisbane to Darwin. They use a nature-led approach with the belief that if they balance the needs of their cattle with the needs of their environment, both can thrive.
Their cattle graze on native grasses like Mitchell grass, which is found only in Australia, and roam wild, foraging at will for the first 2 to 3 years of their lives.
The result is Wagyu beef that reflects the terroir of Northern Australia, and a quality that would complement whatever you're into cooking right now.
Westholm believes that when nature leads, flavor follows. Learn more at westholm.com/savor. That's westholme.com/savor.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward, inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a Gagillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
And we're back with
your song.
The last breath of the dragon. Beautiful. We're having kind of a goofy recording day, everybody.
We are. We are.
Life day, you know?
Yeah. It's just the joy. The joy is just bubbling up out of us instead of viable sentences. So
yes.
It's fine.
Which is sort of a difficulty for podcasting.
Yeah.
It's okay. I will say this letter, which is another letter we're splitting in half because it's a little long, but again, never... That's not a bad thing at all. Please keep the long letters coming.
Yeah.
I think also involves something I could see in a life day situation. The durian.
Oh, okay. Yes. Okay. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Kinna wrote, I write to you from a place of abject and ignominious defeat. I like to consider myself a fairly adventurous eater and in fact have been accused of being a human garbage disposal by my friends. I also have a very strong stomach. I've worked in science labs with a variety of smells ranging from paint thinner and hog farts to week-old beef ramen slowly rotting in the garbage disposal, and have still been able to have a hearty lunch. I'm unfazed by liver and onions, weirdly expensive funky cheeses that I paid too much for on sale to consider throwing out, and the smell of burnt popcorn. And yet, I am defeated. This morning, my brother and I went shopping at the local Southeast Asian supermarket for ingredients for vegan Thanksgiving. Lovely things like mushrooms and black bean paste, baby bok choy, and extra long green beans, bean sprouts and seitan pho beef tips, sesame oil, and curry paste. As I was trying to remember which persimmons are delicious and which taste like getting a cavity filled, he saw it. A singular frozen durian, cracked open like a spiky seed pod, slightly wilted looking, but the approximate size of a pineapple. And it was only $7. My brother's eyes lit up. He went to Malaysia earlier this year to do fieldwork for his PhD, and he swore up and down that everyone he met there, including the American students, loved durian. They ate it in the field. They ate it on the bus. They ate it on the bus to field sites. They ate it fresh. They ate it in stew. They ate it on rice. They ate it for breakfast. His PhD is now durian powered. I was mildly dubious. This is a man who once produced a Mother's Day breakfast of peanut butter and mustard on burnt toast. Then again, I'm willingly re-engineering a Thanksgiving feast with him, so it's several years too late to doubt his ability to create edible food. Plus, I thought I knew something about durian. I listened to your durian episode way back when, and it was described by alleged experts as kind of vanilla-y, kind of custardy, but with an overwhelmingly funky scent. Cheesy, I assumed. Maybe a bit of the off-putting meatiness without substance of bovine serum albumin, or the lightly plasticky taste of woodier mushrooms. I remembered garlic and vanilla coming up and figured that the combination was probably off-putting enough to give durian its reputation.
Kenna continues, I smelled it.
It smelled like lightly sweetened goat cheese with a hint of leeks, overall mild enough to keep in an enclosed room with all the other produce. I figured the intensity of the smell would increase when the fruit was not frozen, but decided I'd give it a try. We bought it and took it to my parents' house to thaw. Fast forward to after dinner, a lovely curry designed to use up whatever was taking up room in the fridge that wasn't earmarked for the feast. The durian, left in my parents' covered porch for several hours, had thawed. Friends, the smell of the durian did not increase. It changed completely. For something so polarizing, it's a weirdly light scent, but it's not sweet or herbal or any scent that most people would name. Instead of smelling like a cheese that didn't know if it was sweet or savory, or like rotting fruit or compost or eggs or anything that had ever been living, it smelled like a gas leak. And not the rotten egg smell of natural gas, it smelled like pumping gas into a rusted out barrel. It smelled like the dirty Bunsen burners in my high school chemistry lab. It smelled like 100 years worth of tin cans being bathed in lighter fluid. It smelled like someone pickled a rotting leek in kerosene. Indescribable. Ah, it smells like the inside of an oil lamp that someone dissolved Play-Doh in. It smells like a reminder that vanilla on its own doesn't actually taste sweet. It smells like I could strike a match in front of my face and breathe fire. And it tastes like if you removed all the flavor molecules from a banana at the cellular level, turned it into a pudding, and let it sit in a metal tray at a buffet for a week until it developed a pudding skin more durable than plastic wrap. Also, the seed in the middle of each lobe feels strangely compressed, like a little puck of laminate flooring. I had one lobe, the approximate size of an apricot. I tried washing my hands and mouth. I tried saltwater gargle. I tried mints. I tried salsa. I tried pickles. I tried inserting my nose directly into a bottle of homemade salad dressing. Nothing worked. Because once you have eaten the durian, the smell lives inside your sinuses and lungs like it pays rent. Every so often, it will waft back through your brain like a chemical spill. That damn durian is sitting on my parents' porch table like a curse because my brother insists he's going to finish eating it, even though it is, and I quote, not a good durian. I have retired to Google whether it is safe to put toothpaste into your nostrils. Happy Thanksgiving.
This is a work of art. Thank you.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, wow.
Very descriptive.
Thank you, Kenna. Thank you, Annie, for giving me that to read. That was lovely. Mm. Oh, my goodness. Mm. That's beautiful.
So good. Very dramatic. Felt like reading a horror story. I loved it. Wow.
Oh, holy heck.
It's hard to say, you know, because we still haven't, I haven't had any.
Yeah.
I don't think.
Yeah, not certainly not fresh or previously frozen, you know, like I, like I had a little bit of like a little like packaged pastry, like a little like puff pastry twist that had some like durian like jam in it. Mm-hmm. But that is clearly a different experience than this. Because yes. I was kind of like, why does this jam taste like garlic? And like, but that was all I really felt about it.
I'm a little worried that you will be haunted by this durian for the rest of your life, to be honest.
I know. It sounds, I mean, it's
lurking.
It knows you now.
It does. It does. And you've tried all of these things, very creative solutions, desperate solutions, and it didn't work. So I don't know. Well, I hope the rest of your meals go well during the holidays.
Yeah, I hope that something eventually, I hope that it's like a like getting a song stuck in your head kind of, and that like eventually you kind of get it out and like maybe it'll pop back, but like less intensely every time, you know?
Right. And you know, maybe one day you'll try a different durian and it'll be a good durian. Or maybe It'll be the same. Yeah, but that's the curse of the Duran. Mm-hmm. I would love to hear how your brother's experience goes if he did eat the rest of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, let us know.
Yeah.
Keep us updated on this Duran situation.
Yeah, and everybody else as well. Absolutely.
Yes. Oh, yes. Well, thank you so much to Kenna for writing in. If you would like to write to us, you can. Our email is hello@saverpod.com.
And we're also on social media. You can find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram @SaverPod. And we do hope to hear from you. Saver is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, you can visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. Thanks, as always, to our super producers, Dylan Fagan and Andrew Howard. Thanks to you for listening. And we hope that lots more good things are coming your way.
Happy Pride from Tomboy X, celebrating pride and the queer community all year. Queer founded, queer run, and the makers of the original boxer briefs for women, creating sustainable size and gender inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies so you feel comfortable in your own skin. Tomboy X just dropped their Pride 24 collection, obsessively fit tested for all day comfort in sizes 3 extra small through 6X. Visit TomboyX.com.
Let's hit it. Give me a vacation.
Vacation.
Give me a wave.
Surfing.
Give me a city tour.
The trolley.
Give me animals.
The zoo.
Give me some sea life. Give me museums.
Balboa Park.
Give me a woo.
Roller coaster.
What's that spell?
San Diego.
If you're happy and you know it, San Diego is the place to show it. Book your family vacation at sandiego.org. Funded in part with the City of San Diego Tourism Marketing District Assessment Funds.
What are you looking for in a new smart TV? 4K picture quality? High quality and immersive sound? A sleek design? All of those are givens, but only the new Roku Pro Series has all of those and the Roku streaming experience and award-winning OS. Get fast, easy access to all your apps like iHeart, where you can stream all your favorite music, radio, and podcasts all day. And regular all-inclusive trips to Roku City. The new Roku Pro Series. A smart TV built by the streaming pros.